kind of crack it open. I wanted to redo this. This is a lesson I've done a while ago, and I think I might do it every Halloweenish time because it's necessary. And so, yeah, I'm being a little adversarial here by calling it the enemy, and the enemy being a lot of the processed food producers is the enemy. And so we're going to talk about it because, again, during Halloween, they're really up to their tricks and on hyperdrive. It's hyperdrive every day of the year anyways, but especially Halloween time, right? Because it's really become a candy holiday now for 3-4 months out of the year. So we're going to get a different viewpoint on it. As I mentioned in the email, a little bit of kind of counter programming, right? And so take it with a grain of salt. What I want to say is this, that, and I think I probably mentioned this somewhere, but I just want to reemphasize it now. It's not about completely giving this stuff up. Okay, you may slowly move in that direction, and before you realize, you look back and like, wow, I don't need any of this stuff anymore. But to all of a sudden just make a decision, I'm never going to do that stuff again, you don't have to do that. You know, it's a gradual progression of eliminating this crap, you know, out of your diet and out of your life. And this is just one more way to make that happen. Again, we're going to reframe the way we look at it. So we start with my favorite quotes. The devil doesn't come to you with red face and horns. He comes to you disguised as everything you ever wanted. Again, I don't know who Tucker Max is, but I love this quote, and it's so true. And again, nothing encapsulates this more than Halloween time, right? I mean, what's more fun than candy and Halloween and trick-or-treating and kids and socializing with your neighbors? And there's just everything great about it. And there's candy right in the middle of it all. So again, this is important. So you may have seen this before, and I don't know, but I should show this more because this to me is jaw-dropping. And we should look at it all the time because you know, it's kind of like the boiled frog thing, right? You know, like how you boil a frog, if you put them in hot water, they jump out. So you put them in cooler water and then you just slowly turn the heat up and before the frog realizes he's been cooked. And so that's what I think of when I look at these maps here in the current state of what we're in, that it's slowly just happened so completely that we can't see it. And so anyways, obviously you can see this is 1994. And the left is obesity, the right is diabetes. And you can see 1994, it's relatively low numbers, right? The percentage of obesity, the percentage of people with diabetes is relatively low, okay? And some states are better than others or whatever, but overall, relatively, it's okay. But it starts changing, okay? This is 95, 96, right? And you can see it's getting progressively worse. Nothing gets better. Every state gets worse. And so you can see it just keeps changing. So now we're 6 years later, right? Now all of a sudden, again, we're getting colors that we didn't have anywhere. You know what I mean? Just 6 years earlier. And we just keep going, right? And the diabetes goes, 2004. Look at this. Look at the obesity. Look at this. This is just 10 years we're talking now. Look at the difference, right? Now we've gone from there was no orange, no red, and now we're half orange and a good percentage red in 10 years. Think about this, which is, just put numbers to this. We're going from less than 14% to 26%. It's almost a doubling. Okay. And now we get going. Look at this. All right. So look at this. All right. Good Lord. Now this only goes up to, I think, 2000. Well, that's a double. So 2012, 2013, 14, 15. Okay. So now we're talking about 20 years later. Look at this, right? Look at this. And so look where we went. Okay. We're talking about 20 years. And so again, I'm going to assume it's just gotten worse. And so that's 2015. So the last 4 years, it was probably all red, you know? And so look at this, right? This is where we're at. Okay. So something's happening. For something to be so dramatic and in effect, everyone, something is happening that we're just not seeing. You know what I mean? Like it's bigger than just, I don't know. It's bigger than just fast food. It's bigger than just not exercising and screens and being more, you know, not as active. I mean, there's something going on. And this is what I think it is, right? I think what it is a consolidated power of our food supply. And so there's really only a few companies controlling most of the food supply. And if I'm not mistaken, this might even consolidate a little bit more since I got this. But again, you can see that all of these companies, there's a very small number of people making decisions for a lot of people. And it's not decisions that are serving us well. Okay. And so I find this very interesting because, again, we it's very easy to get seduced and fall in love with the brands. Right? There's a lot of marketing that connects us and associates us with lots of positive feelings to these brands. But again, when you look at the big picture of it all, it's kind of scary, especially when you look at the diabetes picture that goes along with it. And so before we get into the actual lesson, I just wanted to real quickly, and this is back to the sugar. Remember, in general, we don't want to just say, well, we can learn about sugar and we can know it's bad for us, right? And so what's ultimately going to dictate how we behave is the perceptions and the associations we have with sugar, okay? And so it's my goal here in this lesson here to kind of shift those things up. It's not enough just to say, well, sugar's not bad for me, I'm going to stop eating it. Because if you have positive perceptions and positive associations to it, those are ultimately always going to win. They're just driving the cravings, driving the behavior. And so if we don't change those, we're always just fighting against them, you know, with the willpower. And it's hard to maintain that. So what we're always looking to do is go deeper and shift our perceptions of sugar and how it influences our body, shift the associations we have so that it's not one of excitement and happiness and joy and youthfulness and all this, but one of disease. And again, I want to be clear, it's not just sugar, it's the amount of sugar. Okay, so a little bit of sugar, it's relatively harmless. It's the way that they've snuck so much sugar into our foods that we don't see, that's the problem. And so I just want to cover real quick insulin. It's important to understand how this works. So when blood glucose levels rise after a meal, okay, so all the food we eat is broken down into glucose, and every cell of your body can utilize glucose. It's the fuel that runs them. And so in blood, so the food's digested and the glucose is released into the blood, and now it's floating around the blood to be brought to all the different parts of our body. So when blood glucose levels rise after a meal, snack, or drink, the pancreas releases insulin into the blood. And what the insulin does, and again, it's everything's regulated. So, you know, you eat a candy bar. Now your blood gets lots of glucose in it. And what has to happen is your pancreas has to release insulin to open the cells up, right? So again, the metaphor is that the cells have a keyhole, and the insulin's kind of like the key. And it unlocks the cells and allows the glucose to go into the cells. It's a real simplistic way to think about it. And what that does is it clears the glucose out of the blood. Okay, so we don't want to have a high blood sugar level, right? It's inflammatory and it causes systemic problems. And so insulin, it stimulates the liver and muscle tissues to store excess glucose. And in a healthy person, these functions allow blood glucose and insulin levels to remain in the normal range. So it's important to understand that when we first eat the candy bar or something that spikes our blood sugar, the glucose in the blood, that spike, that tsunami effect of it, is damaging to the system. Then our body releases the insulin to try and clear it out. And that high level of insulin, because again, the insulin's relative to the amount of glucose in the body, the high level of insulin's inflammatory to the system as well. And so it's really kind of a 1-2 punch effect it has on our bodies, okay? And so again, when we eat unprocessed foods that may even have sugar in them, naturally, what happens is it's a slower release process, okay? And so as the glucose is released into the bloodstream, it's a much slower, it's not that spike phenomenon. And so it's much more even keel. And as it's even keel, the insulin that gets released is in relation to that much more even, okay? And so again, the thing to understand is that tsunami effect. And the metaphor I like to use is, you know, if there's rain in your town and it rains an inch a day, the system can handle it. But if you get, you know, 1 foot of rain an hour, you know what I mean? It overwhelms the system, okay? And so that's what we want to be thinking about. And so what happens with insulin resistance, right? In insulin resistant, the muscle, fat, liver cells don't respond properly to insulin, and they cannot easily absorb glucose from the bloodstream. And so what happens is your body releases more insulin, right? It's kind of like the drug thing. You can take a drug to get a response, but eventually your body habituates to it. You need more of the drug to get the same response. And that's going on with the insulin. So the pancreas tries to keep up with this increased demand. As long as it produces enough to overcome the resistance, everything stays fine. The resistance problem happens when the cells, again, here, insulin resistance leads to type 2 diabetes, prediabetes, because the beta cells fail to keep up with the body's increased need for insulin. Okay. And so the cells get more and more resistant to the insulin and more of it. Your body has to produce more insulin, and it just becomes this whole systemic nightmare. And this is what leads to prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. And again, we've seen what's happened with type 2 diabetes over the last 20 years. I mean, it is crazy. And the numbers are even worse around the world. So again, it's a big problem. And so what's making this happen? Well, primarily, there's a bunch of sugar. I mean, it's a lot of different things. So I don't want to just say it's just sugar. It's a combination of things. But sugar is a big part of them. And so because it's Halloween, we're going to talk about that. So a lot of what we're going to talk about here is Salt, Sugar, and Fat by Michael Moss. Super book, right? Great, interesting read. Read it if you can. One of the things, again, we're going to talk about the last 25 years, 30 years here have been very unique because the spikes in obesity and in diabetes there, it's amazing. It's an epidemic. And if there wasn't so much money involved in it, we would probably be looking at this as a real big issue. Right. Because again, we've had the drug war, and war on HIV when that was big. But again, there's a lot of money involved. And so right around that time, what's interesting is that the cigarette companies right around the 80s started to see the writing on the wall. Okay. They're going to come after us. That we can't hide that cigarettes and cancers are linked. And so what they do is they want to diversify. And so what they did is a lot of the actual cigarette companies went and bought these processed food companies. And, I think there's something to be said. I think there's a bit of a correlation between that happening and some of these issues we have, because what a lot of these cigarette companies did is they brought their marketing, specifically marketing to children, making their products really just, appeal to everyone, even though they're not serving us. These companies are only concerned with profit. So that is my goal here, to reframe what we're looking at. The sugar, it's easy to have this story we have. Because the packaging looks good and we associate it with Halloween and fun and a treat and a break and entertainment. And that's one side of it. But the other side is that it's a very cynical business, just like cigarettes. I don't make this comparison lightly. It's very, very specific to cigarettes in the sense that they are actively hiding the links and the connections between these foods and the health effects that they cause. And so, again, these companies are only concerned with profit. And I think we do ourselves a service by looking at the companies that produce these foods, very similar to how we look at cigarette companies, drug dealers, right? We don't tend to romanticize drug dealers. We have very negative opinions of them and the destruction they cause our communities. But these guys probably should be hopped right in there, because there's a good chance you know someone who's struggling with diabetes. Right. So again, it's probably a real thing that you're dealing with, or obesity. Salt, sugar, and fat. Again, that's what they're using to get us to overconsume. At this point, you probably know this. I'm going to spend a lot of time on it. But basically, salt, sugar, and fat in the natural world were rare. And so when we found them in the natural world, our brain has evolved to light up and our pleasure centers light up and want us to eat more and more and more of it. Because again, over the millions or hundreds of thousands of years that we've evolved, salt, sugar, and fat was a great thing, okay, because it was on a limited supply. Now it's all around us. And so we have to learn how to kind of interact with it differently now, or it will kill us. and again, at this point in the world, and this is America, this number, but 3/4 of the adult population is overweight or obese, okay? And so it goes beyond just being able to say no or having the right information about what we should and shouldn't eat. Again, it's psychological. It triggers our brain to overconsume it, which is another way to say it acts very much like a drug. Okay. It overrides our capacity to say no, and kind of triggers us to overconsume. So what you have, your greatest tool is not your willpower. Your greatest tool is your perceptions. Okay. And the way you're perceiving this. And so it's the kind of metaphorically, it's like, it's the opportunity to put a different pair of glasses on. So not that you have to say, oh God, I got to say no to my favorite candies or sweets. That implies that you love that stuff. What this is about is saying, yeah, I do like it, but good Lord, look what it does to my body. It's spiking my insulin. It's throwing me off track. It's putting weight on my body. It's hurting my knees. It's making me feel like crap about myself. They're both real. Remember, there's no good or bad. It's good and bad. Everything is good and bad. And it depends on how we look at it that dictates which one we experience most. Okay. So your perceptions are your greatest tool. And ultimately, truth is your strongest weapon against false conditioning. All these ads we see, all the propaganda that we've been exposed to our whole lives with these foods is strong. But what's stronger still is that we've got the truth on our side. And again, nothing explains this or proves this more than cigarettes. Okay. Cigarettes are, again, it's debatable, but a lot of people believe that cigarettes are the most addictive substance, more addictive than heroin. And yet when people found out about the strong correlation with cancer and they found out what it does to their health, and after a bit of propaganda on the other side of it, a lot of people quit cigarettes and never start to begin with. Okay, so you've got the truth on your side, you know, against all this false conditioning that we're exposed to. So 2020 processed food sales, again, this information is a little old, but it's the most recent I could get. There are about 300 companies that form the $1 trillion food manufacturing industry, all right? The top five in 2015 were Tyson Foods, right? $40 billion. PepsiCo, $37 billion. Nestle, $27 billion. Coca-Cola and Kraft. Okay. So these are really the top that are really dictating a lot of what's in our food, right? And they're responsible. I guess, you know what I mean? When you're doing sales this big, when you're influencing such a wide range of people, there's kind of a natural responsibility that you should, you know, I would think, you know, have some, you know, responsibility to serve them health-wise. That's not the case at this point in time. So we have to take it upon ourselves. We have to look at these companies very much like the cigarette companies. And again, those are companies, they're making money. They've got people working for them, but we don't look at the cigarette companies in a romantic way anymore. And we really shouldn't look at these anymore. And I promise you in our lives, this will be the case because these guys are sitting on the information of the links between the ill health effects, diabetes, heart disease, cancers, certain cancers in their foods, exactly the same way that they were 40 years ago, sitting on the information between cancer and cigarettes. And so you might as well get ahead of the curve and start seeing them for what they are, because that is what helps you feel more neutral to their foods. Yeah, you may like those candies, you may have liked cigarettes, but you can look at them both ways. That's what we're looking to do, okay? So we're not just relying on willpower. So cravings and consumptions rate in 2001, average soda consumption was 32 gallons a year per person. Think about that, 30 gallons a year. Sweet drinks, energy drinks, teas, 14 gallons a year, right? Bliss point. So this is an industry term they use, which is the precise amount of salt, sugar, and fat that makes food or drink most palatable and delivers the most pleasure. And as we're going to find out in a second, this is a whole industry. I think we lose sight of it because of all the marketing and the packaging, and we just don't think about it. But this is the most engineered addiction ever, even beyond cigarettes, right? Now, cigarettes got nicotine, and that's pretty addictive. But we've got sugar, which is a close second. And on top of that, this doesn't have the obvious health detriments that the smoking does right away, okay? And so they're able to create just unlimited products, you know, using this bliss point idea, which is another way to say they're looking to get you addicted to their foods and their sugars and their products, okay? Again, do with that what you will, but that part is a fact. Vanishing calorie density. If something melts down quickly, your brain thinks that there's no calories in it and you can just keep eating it, right? And so the example of Cheetos, right? That's really considered just a stellar invention in the food manufacturing world. Because if you ever had a Cheeto, when you put it in your mouth, again, your saliva, it starts dissolving almost instantly. And what happens is it causes you to eat more and more and more of it, but you don't feel full. Okay. And I don't know if I talk about soda drinks are the same thing. Liquid calories, if you think about this, in nature, there were no liquid calories, right? So your brain has no representation of what a liquid calorie is. And so what I mean by that is that you could drink a can of soda with the 250 calories in it and it doesn't register. And so you drink 250 calories, but you get no satiety benefit from it. You're just as hungry as you were at the end of it. All right. So that's an important thing to remember. And so, again, the two key things that they look at for creating cravings for foods are this bliss point and mouthfeel, right? Kind of interesting, but the way something interacts in our mouth has a huge impact on how much we crave it. And so, and obviously the bliss point, that makes sense, right? So that perfect amount of salt, sugar, and fat, that combination. And if you think about it, right, think about your favorite candy bar, or your favorite dessert. Look at Ben and Jerry's. I mean, really, right? It's a combination of them now, right? Again, it's got the fat of the ice cream, obviously the sugar in the ice cream. And a lot of times they're adding like pretzels in it or a salty thing as well. And again, it creates this bliss point, this intense bliss point. So some marketing tricks they use. The most common marketing trick tactic is to promote one good ingredient, hoping that consumers will overlook the rest, right? I see this in my son's school, in my daughter's school. They're trying to do good, okay? So I'm not blaming the people that are making these decisions. But what they do As I said, well, what kind of cereal do they have? I asked my son, who's in second grade. He goes, well, Cocoa Pebbles. I said, what? They're serving Cocoa Pebbles for breakfast? And I went in and I looked at the cereal, and what's it, it says Cocoa Pebbles on it, but what's in a bright yellow banner across it? Made with whole grains, right? So, you know, again, it is the most classic trick. We can't fall for it, okay? It's straight up hypnosis. It's a suggestion to get us to stop thinking. And so, again, that's the big one. So again, gluten-free, you know, whole grain, natural ingredients, right? So be careful with that one. Cereal manufacturers spend 2 times as much on ads as ingredients. I thought that was interesting. And I would agree with it's true. You know, the cereal's crazy. Product news, right? Over time a shopper hits supermarket, they find something different about it. That should be every time. More crunch, less sugar. So what they do now is, you know, you've seen this, okay? So I just want to bring your attention to it. But when you see like more crunch or less sugar or whole grains added or natural flavors, no corn syrup, right? These are all tricks to kind of distract us from what we're actually eating, okay? And so it's up to you to educate yourself with this and be able to see through it. The more you understand what they're using on you, the more you can see through it. It's just like if you ever watch, I always reference this masked magician guy. Years ago, this guy, he wore a mask and he basically went on I think it was Fox, and he did a whole show about how he told how all the tricks were done. So he's kind of a jerk, but whatever. I watched it. It was interesting, but it was very interesting because once you realize how a trick's done, it takes a lot of the magic out of it. You know what I mean? So you watch the trick done when you know how it's done. You're not being awed. You're not amazed. You're not entranced. And that's my goal for you here, that the more you can understand the tactics they're using on you, the psychological tricks, you can see them for what they are and not fall prey to them. And instead you can look through them and look at what you are putting into your body. Right? That's the goal. The ubiquity strategy to be in as many settings as possible so that you associate it to fun times. Okay. So you see this now to the point where it's like, they got like Coca-Cola Stadium. I mean, you know what I mean? Like it's everywhere. And what happens is it just becomes part of the wallpaper, becomes part of our lives. Halloween, right? Even to the point where it's candy everywhere at the end of August. You know what I mean? So again, it's just, it's constantly everywhere around us and they link it with fun times. I know like Pepsi in my supermarket, they always got like the coolest, like football, when football season comes around, they got the coolest displays, right? And so you're not thinking Pepsi when you're looking at it, like, wow, that's neat. It looks it looks like the uprights and that looks like a football and that looks like a robot football player. And you're just amazed. But what's happening is you're looking at their thing, you're associating all that cool, all that's neat to their product, okay? And it works. Again, the packaging's tailored to excite us. The advertising uses every psychological trick to overcome any logical arguments we might have for passing the product by. The taste is powerful. We remember from the last time we had it. And formulas are calculated and perfected by scientists. And that always just shakes me, is like, these foods are not designed by chefs. They are designed by scientists. And the levels they go to create the most addictive product is disgusting. We're gonna talk about it in a minute. But again, what I'm looking to do here is shift your frame, even to the point, if you cannot even look at these, I look at junk food and kind of sweets and stuff like that. I look at it like alcohol. Okay. And so I like alcohol. I drink alcohol. Is it the best thing for me? No. But I like it. And what I do is I put a frame around it so that I do it sometimes frame, right? On the weekends, a couple nights a week, I will have a couple beers or a glass of wine or something. And so I look at it as a separate treat, right? That's what I would like you to do ultimately with a lot of these foods. Okay. So again, I'm not saying don't do them ever, but recognize what we're doing. I mean, this stuff is chemicals. It's addictive things that has wreaks havoc in our system, right? And should be seen as such. Okay. And every marketing thing they do is basically getting us to look past that part of it. So the business selling processed foods, this was in that book. And this, again, I don't know if this bothers you or not. It bothers me, but Coke refers to their most loyal customers as heavy users, right? They literally use words you would use to describe drug users, right? Because that's how they look at it, because that's what it is, right? It's people that drink, you know, I mean, I can't remember the number now, but I mean, it's so much soda. Like they're heavy users. I wish I wrote that down, but they're heavy users. It's a lot of soda, like way more than you would ever think, you know, a person would ever want to drink. So that's one thing. So this is Coke's marketing department. They got their one primary question they'd always ask: how can we drive more ounces into more bodies more often? Right? If that doesn't make you feel gross, you know, I don't know what will. It's gross. Again, if you just put that into cigarettes, they ask the same question with cigarettes. You know, it's the same thing. It's this addictive, harmful substance that they're just trying to get us to eat. They don't care about our health. The Department of Agriculture Division that helps people eat healthier is called the Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion. They get 0.0045% of the overall $146 billion budget, which is to say that they get virtually nothing. And when they do come up with different studies and statistics and information that would be helpful, they're actively, you know, kind of fought against. You can support them. I will let you know this. I actually have it right here. So I get a thing, right? And so it's a newsletter. And it's the best one that I get. And it's so inexpensive, right? It's literally, I got it right here. It's a dollar. I was showing you the renewal offer. But so, you know, dairy and diet myths, you know, this is all real stuff though. It's real science funded by the government. So it's real studies, very interesting. You read it and you feel like you're in bizarro world because it's kind of a newsletter. It's a little bit like a magazine, but you're reading like healthy stuff. It's weird. So it's like $10 for a year issue, right? So it's very inexpensive, but definitely, I would strongly suggest you get a subscription to them to support them and to put this stuff in your house, right? I promise you read this thing. I forget when it comes, like once a month or every other month. When it comes and you read it, it's just like, it's like a breath of fresh air. It's like seeing reality for what it really is. It's a good thing. So some eye-opening numbers, right? Unilever, one of the companies that we referenced in the beginning there, they spent, and they're the ones that, excuse me, Unilever, I don't know if they still do. These guys change companies all the time, but Unilever are now the owners of Ben & Jerry's, or they were until recently. So they spent $30 million on brain imaging and other advanced neurological tools to study the sensory powers of food, okay? Which is another way to say, and I forget if I put this in here, but they put people in fMRI machines, scan their brains while they drip different ice cream concoctions into their mouth and watch their brains light up. That's the level it goes to. Frito-Lay's, right? Their research complex has nearly 500 chemists, psychologists, and technicians conducting research. They've got an entire campus down in Texas. And then I think I've mentioned this before, right? There's a $40,000 Frito-Lay's. They got a $40,000 device that simulates chewing mouth to test and perfect chips, discovering things like the perfect break point of chips. And it turns out people like a chip that snaps at 4 pounds of pressure per square inch. This is what we're up against, right? And this is just the tip of the iceberg, the very, very tip of the iceberg of what we're up against here. So a couple solutions, right? I never recommend anything without any some solutions, but hopefully even some of the stuff we talked about is changing some of your unconscious perceptions and associations you have to these companies and to the foods that they provide us, or the food stuff that they put in our faces. Because again, that's the first initial shift we want to make. Not that, oh, I shouldn't eat that because I want to lose weight, but I don't want to support these people. They're not doing good things. They're not trying to help anyone. They're just out for a profit, and they are hurting and killing people you probably love. They're reducing the quality of life for a lot of people just the same way drug addictions do, right? These are just food addictions, and they, again, any addiction, any overconsumption of something ultimately is going to lead to all sorts of problems, and that's where we're at. Okay, so some solutions, research. I think this is, again, this is so effective. This is programming, by the way. When you research things, you're programming because you're shifting your perceptions, you're shifting your associations. We're so bombarded with propaganda that even basic research, even, and again, one of the things, watching documentaries, even crappy documentaries can really be like, oh my God, I hadn't thought of that. Because we're so surrounded by it that, we just can't even see outside of it. And so any documentary that questions some of the common things we do, I find to be helpful. They're not all great. They're not all accurate. But to me, it's like, I've seen documentaries that maybe they portray things in a certain way. Maybe not the most neutral. Maybe they're biased. Okay. But we've been so unbiased the other way, right? And when we're talking about a $1 trillion industry that's spending billions and billions of dollars a year on marketing, they're biased. So to me, it's like, yeah, some of these documentaries, yeah, some of the people are you know, activists, some of them are, you know, are biased, and that's fine because it's so unbalanced that I'll take it. Okay. And again, who cares if it's a biased documentary that's not 100% accurate, that gets you to eat less junk food, who cares? That's how I look at it. So documentaries, I find to be one of the most powerful, because again, video is a powerful medium. So Netflix has got a ton of them. You know, all the streaming services do. YouTube's got a bunch of them. It makes a big difference if you commit to watching these occasionally. It doesn't have to be all the time, but just occasionally watch what you're eating in this sense, not watching calories, but get a little curious. Think about, where are these foods coming from? What is this stuff I'm putting my body doing? I had a call last week with a lady who's diabetic, type 2 diabetes. She just diagnosed like 3 months ago, and she didn't know, she didn't understand what insulin and blood glucose, what all that was, you know, and we're not educated to the basics of our health, and a basic education with this stuff can be really helpful. Okay. So that's why I say watching documentaries is one of the best ways that I've seen out there. It's one of the easiest. In an hour and a half, 2 hours, hour, whatever, you can put a lot of information in your brain that you hadn't thought about. So that's one of my favorites. Researching online, getting curious. If there's a food you're struggling with, right? So it could be anything, literally anything. So say I like peanut butter cups, okay? And so I've been eating them since I was a kid, right? Like them. And so instead of me saying, okay, I got to stop eating them, well, I'm always going to have that internal battle. But what if I research them, right? And that kind of brings me to the next one. So how do you research online? There's a lot of ways to do it, obviously. But one of my favorites is researching the ingredients. And so when I look at a peanut butter cup, what I did, I said, what's in this thing? And so I start analyzing the ingredients, right? And it's, that's, if you ever want to know what hypnosis feels like in a real clear cut way, that's a fun thing to do, because you can read the ingredients, and you're reading the ingredients, and you're like, oh, what's that? Oh, that doesn't sound good. What's that? What's that? And you're making this kind of gross face, but then you kind of step away from it, and you look at the packaging, and it's like all these warm feelings come to it, you know? And so that is hypnosis, when it kind of hijacks our conscious mind, and it goes right to our emotions, and it's very effective. But so again, researching, if you're struggling with peanut butter cups, you can break out, what are these ingredients? Okay. What is, you know, monosodium, you know, glutamate, you know, number 6, whatever it may be. And you're like, okay, let me look that up. What is that? Oh, that sounds gross. I don't want to put that in my body. High fructose corn syrup. That's a great one to do some research on. Go watch a couple videos on high fructose corn syrup. You might feel different about it. Okay. So again, that's what we're talking about. We're looking to go right to the core of it and shift the perceptions and the associations. Because if you can shift the associations and the perceptions you have to, say, peanut butter cups, I'm not saying that I don't still crave them sometimes, but when I do, it's because I forgot what's in them. Now, sometimes I crave them, I still eat them. Okay. But I'm not just eating peanut butter cups anymore. I'm eating, again, all the stuff that's in them as well. And so I never feel as addicted to eating them as I used to. Right? I feel like I have much more control. So again, I want to reemphasize that this doesn't have to be a complete black or white thing, right? You can read this gross stuff and still eat it. It's a weird feeling. Again, that goes back to the cognitive dissonance lesson that we did a couple months ago. But I think that's the way to go to not only lose weight and be healthier, but to just feel better about the whole process. You know, you don't have to be perfect. Sometimes when you put this crap in our body, it's fine. When it's occasionally, sometimes. Okay. It's when it's all the time, right? That's when we're putting ourselves on a collision course. It's no different than having a drug addiction. It really is no different. We know that now. We're watching people consistently get type 2 diabetes and all the problems that go with it, heart disease, obesity, lack of movement. So again, there's no difference between being a cocaine addict and it leading us in direction, being an alcoholic, cirrhosis of the liver, and being addicted to food and going in that direction. Okay, so we got to wake ourselves up a bit here. Reading books, again, that's another way to do it. Very helpful, because again, they create a narrative. That sugar, salt, sugar, fat book, right? Again, these are things, you know, you get them and just kind of work through them. And it just, it changes. It's a paradigm shift. All of a sudden, you get to see what you're actually putting in your body. You get to see the industry that's providing it for you. And it's just like, if you can remember the cigarette companies. I remember when I never think cigarettes were good for you, but I didn't think they caused cancer. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get all this information and all this propaganda of how bad they are. And all of a sudden you feel differently about cigarettes, right? Especially if you're a non-smoker. You're just like, you didn't like them anyways, but now you're like, oh, I would never do that. Okay. That's all just conditioning. And we can do that with the foods as well. And so what I like to say is kind of put on your truth glasses when you go shopping, when you see commercials or drive by fast food or convenience stores. Again, when you go shopping, don't go really hungry. That makes you more suggestible. Truth glasses are, again, when you look through the marketing, right to what the ingredients are. So I do this all the time when I see commercials, like especially soda commercials. They really infuriate me. Not because they're targeted to kids too, by the way, right? And so when I watch those soda commercials in my mind, I'm always thinking how much sugar's in them. I parallel while I'm watching the commercial, I'm imagining, if you've seen the commercial, I've shown you this sometimes, where it'll put the mound of sugar in front of the soda. And that's what I imagine in my mind. Or I imagine, you know, the Coca-Cola thing with the 22 packets of sugar is how much sugar is in a 20-ounce bottle of Coke. And it's gross to me. That's gross to me. So I prefer to think of my own image of it, my own perception of it. And that helps me eat better. And so you can do that with fast foods and all the rest of it. And then ultimately, again, this isn't about just, again, our brain wants to just say, okay, that's it. I'm never going to eat this stuff again. But that can almost be overwhelming. Okay. So it doesn't have to be this entire shift all of a sudden at once. If you want to do that, more power to you, but it doesn't have to be that. And so you can remove, reduce, replace as much processed food as possible. And that becomes the goal. And again, step by step, you weave a much stronger foundation for yourself. Okay. Doesn't have to be everything at once. And so ideally we remove it, right? Great. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. If it doesn't work, again, we replace it with something healthier. Doesn't have to be the healthiest thing, but just anything that's healthier than that. And so a good mid-step is to go from kind of like the traditional packaged processed junk foods to the more natural versions of them. Okay. Where again, the ingredients are just more natural, you know? Is it going to serve you better? You know, high fructose corn syrup, for example, something that's just a staple of our diet, the standard American diet now, they don't even know what this does to the body over a decent period of time. There's no tests on what it does to your body over 20 years. They don't know yet. And so you're basically participating in an experiment. And in this experiment, I would not want to participate in, because everything seems to be going in the wrong direction. If we look at the map we started this whole call with here. So again, you really gotta, my goal here is to elevate your motivation and your intentions to work this stuff out of your diet, okay? And again, replace it, you know, there's options now, good options, right? They may cost a little bit more in the short term, but in the long term, you're gonna save a lot of money on medical bills and misery, all right? And then reducing is another one. So even if you just wanna eat less of it, you know, cut it down a little bit, get the smaller servings. Don't finish them, save them for later. Reduce it down, because this stuff is throwing off your system and it's very difficult to get a handle on it all when you're, you know, just for example, the sugar spikes. And again, sugar and processed carbs spike our sugar. And so we're on this constant roller coaster, and it's a roller coaster of physical energy, of actually having energy, right? We've got a bunch of energy and then we're crashing. Right, mentally, right? We're thinking, oh, we're thinking about stuff, frazzled thinking, though. It's not a great level of thinking. And then we crash and then we're just kind of lethargic. And again, and the emotions follow along with that as well. So when we're constantly on this roller coaster of physical, mental, and emotional energy, it's very difficult to get a handle and do things consistently healthy. Right. So again, all right. So enough of that, right? So I hope this helps you out. And I want to do this right at this time. Okay, because you can still enjoy Halloween, right? You can still have some candy. You know, it's when it becomes ubiquitous, right? The ubiquity strategy. It's just everywhere. And when things are always around, we start to minimize how harmful we think they are. It's just a natural process that happens. So it's up to you. You have to keep this up. And it's to your detriment if you don't, you know? So it's a key thing. All right, cool. Hope you enjoyed this. It's one of my favorites. Human needs. All right. So yeah, if you guys got any questions, feel free to ask them. If hey, there's Pat. Let's see. Hey Pat, what's up?
Hi there.
How's it going?
Good, good. It's going great. I
Nice.
absolutely love what you have to say
Super.
because I've been working with you for a while and it's been wonderful. And it's really helped me to stop and kind of think about what I'm doing. And the more knowledge I have on just what I'm eating or drinking, it
Right.
really does help to stop it. It's like, okay, just like when I quit smoking and thinking
Right.
about what it was doing to my body, it makes a huge difference. It really
Yeah.
does.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that point up because that's what I'm always trying to say. It's not easy to create like a paradigm shift, but that's what we're looking to do. Because it's like at some point the cigarettes, it flips in your mind. You get away from a little bit, and there's willpower involved with it too. So I'm not saying we don't use any willpower, but we don't want to rely on willpower. And so for you, I'm imagining like you not smoking now is just part of who you are. Like you're not fighting cravings still, are you? Maybe
No.
sometimes.
No, I mean, every once in a while, I'll look at someone smoking. This is 30 years ago.
Right.
And I'll think, oh, I wish I could have one. But then I think immediately, oh, that is just so harmful. I wouldn't
Yeah.
want them. And
Right.
I'm actually doing the same thing with, even having a glass of wine. Because the more I learn about ethanol and all the poisons that are in it, I'm
Right.
thinking, well, how can they be marketing this as the great, thing to do to go ahead and relax and all your social
Right.
events are around it. And it just makes it easier and easier to make a better decision.
Right. Yeah, that's brilliant. I got to look into that. You're totally right. And you know, that's one thing I want to point out too, because it's like once you realize it's like it's so obvious a lot of times, but it's like we just don't think about it. You know what I mean? Like, and especially with food, because we're so bombarded. I mean, we live in this cocoon of, I work, she's not here tonight, but Tamara lives in Australia. And so her family, some of them have come out to America. And she was saying, like, the bread, they were talking about how sweet the bread is, right? Now, that's nothing you've ever thought. I've never thought our bread's sweet, right? It's like, so it's
No.
so funny, though. You know what I mean? Like, everything's relative to what you live in. And so it's like you can't even see it. You know what I mean? Because you're so used to it, that you would never think your bread's sweet, right? But they think it is. And again, it's funny. I mean, a lot of outside cultures, they're becoming more like us, but they look at us, and again, the size of our foods and everything gets normalized. You know what I mean? So when all of a sudden when the large is this big, you know what I mean? Like this big, the small seems smaller, but the small now is like 16 ounces. You know what I mean? So everything is getting kind of supersized, and we can't tell what's normal anymore. You know, we don't
Exactly.
know.
And because everybody's doing it, it
Right.
makes it okay.
Right. That's right. That's 1,000% it. And that's what I mean. It becomes like this echo chamber. Because we see it, you know what I mean, from our media, it's constantly hitting us. But then how it really affects us, and we see everyone around us that we love and that cares for us doing it, you know? And so, again, this is in no way, and I think you guys would know this, but this isn't to say you're a bad person if you give your kids sugar or your grandkids sugar or whatever like that. Because I give my kids sugar. I try and limit it. But again, we live in the world. I don't want to raise nut jobs. Like, I don't want to raise kids that can't, be part of the normal world. But there needs to be some balance, you know, and the balance comes through, I think, seeing things for what they are. And we don't see things for what they are. Like I always say, when I became a hypnotist, I thought I was going to hypnotize people. I didn't realize most of the work was going to be dehypnotizing people, waking people up. And that includes me. My whole process here has been waking up to truths that are so obvious, but they were just truths I never stopped to think about. And that's what so much of this reality is, that we live in. So again, that's the purpose I wanted to make here. And when you start looking for this, especially this lesson here, when you start going into the supermarkets with those glasses on, your truth glasses, I think what starts to happen is you start to get almost like a little pissed off. Like with the cigarettes, right? It's kind of like at some point you got to start getting mad. Like the companies are kind of taking advantage of you. Did you ever feel that way? Did you ever feel like the cigarette companies were kind of taking advantage of you? Oh, I think you're muted. Hold on one second. Let me mute you.
Okay, there I am. Okay. Am I unmuted now?
Yeah. We can
Oh,
hear
okay, perfect. Yeah, no, I absolutely did. Not
you.
when I was smoking, but when I quit, I would sit there and I would picture them in a boardroom, all sitting around a table, just laughing
right.
at me every time I would pick up a cigarette to smoke it. Right. And it's the same thing I do now with food manufacturing companies, because I'm actually very good about not, I would say not totally there, but I would say I am like at least 80% better than I've ever been at not eating processed foods and candy and stuff like that. But it's, you're right, it's exactly the same thing. It's a whole marketing campaign right. to get us to eat and show us all the social events around what, eating big cakes and ice cream and
right.
glasses of wine. And you don't see them sitting there eating a nice salad or a decent bowl of soup.
Right. That's exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I always joke. I mean, there's never any ads for like broccoli, you know what I mean? Like or carrots or you know, lettuce. There's no ads for that stuff. And so, yeah, I don't know. We have to look at it. You know, that's why I call it the enemy. I'm not trying to be this confrontational person, but it's like everything else, like drug dealers, cigarette companies, alcohol companies are kind of somewhere in the middle there because we like alcohol, but, yeah. but at least, you know, if you think about those, even cigarettes and the alcohol, at least there's age limits on it. And so it's like, when it comes to the food, it's the most like nefarious in my opinion, because yeah. it's like, they know what it does. And, you know, so some people say, well, yeah, but drugs and food, they're different. How are they different? At this point in time, it's clear. And this is documented that our eating habits are the number one cause of preventable illnesses of death, preventable Absolutely. Things that cause death, because most of it is, again, diabetes related, heart, cardiac related, and cancer. And cancer, if you don't think that putting this crap in your body for 30 years doesn't have any influence on cancer, I mean, that's yeah. crazy. You know what I mean? Speaking to that, actually, this was an interesting fact. I should have put this in here, but when you think about it, we basically have three ways to interface with the world. The first one is our skin, which is the smallest amount, right? The next one is our lungs. Okay, so if you take our lungs and spread them out, it's about the size of like a tennis court or something. And the biggest way that we have to interact with the world is actually our digestive tract. Because if you take the digestive tract, the intestines, and you spread them out, I forget the number, so I might get this wrong, but it's like the size of like a football field. And yeah. so the most that way that we interact with the outside world is through what we're putting in our mouths. And so, yeah, obviously smoking causes lung problems and systemic problems in our body. But what does putting corn syrup and all these different chemicals into our mouths, that you know what I mean? That's our number one way to interact with the world. And so we're stuffing this stuff down our face.
Yeah.
It has a huge impact, right?
And I was just thinking, you know, Ansel Keys, mm-hmm. who came up with the whole, you know, like limit your fat. And right. then they started getting on the food companies to go ahead and to limit the fat, and they had to put more sugar in there.
Yeah.
You know, right. they had to, because if you don't have the fat, good fats, I'm not talking right, about right. crappy fats, but good healthy fat, you have to have sugar to right. compensate for the lack of flavor. That's and high fructose right. corn syrup was cheaper yeah. than anything.
Right, right. That's perfect. I'm glad you said that. Yeah, that's totally so, true.
Yeah, so they're laughing at us if we're not smartening up, and you've helped tremendously. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well, good, good. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, and that's the attitude. Again, I'm not looking to be, you know, I don't know. To me, I read an email sometimes. I call it the George Costanza method, because I don't know if you remember George Costanza from Seinfeld. He used to get all mad all the time. And that's how I feel, though. I get so worked up, and it's a weird, you know, people will look at you like you're crazy if you say this stuff to them, most people. But it's crazier when you think about it. Again, it's very much like the cigarette companies, and it's worse because they're targeting kids. You know, drug dealers, again, we don't like drug dealers in general. But these guys are doing it on a bigger level than all of them combined. And so to bring some of this anger and this frustration, it's a very effective way to change how you eat. Because like you said, to imagine them in the boardroom just laughing at you, you know, and if you have anyone that's suffering from diabetes or heart disease or obesity, really suffering with it, you should imagine these people in their boardroom laughing and saying, who cares? Who gives a shit if people are getting diabetes and dying of heart disease? Now, that hits hard with me because my father died of a heart attack when he was 54. I'm not blaming them for that. It was a while ago, but still, you know, I think about the real effects, because why do we hate drugs? Why do we, you know what I mean? Like, because it causes destruction within the family. So does food when it's addictive. And so, again, we should bring that same level of, you know, I don't know what you would call it, awareness to it. And again, knowing that they're actively working against you so that they can line their pockets, you know, hopefully it makes you somewhat upset, and you want to use that upset to change up your eating habits, you know, in a more subtle way. So cool. Anyone else got any questions? Anything you want to say? No, my group. All right. Well, good. All right, everyone. It was a pleasure with you guys tonight, and keep it up. Remember this stuff. Remember this lesson tonight. When you're going through the week here, when you're surrounded by all the candy and all the packaging and all the funness, pay attention. And again, even if you eat it, it's okay, but pay attention to what you're thinking about. I find it very interesting when I look at the peanut butter cups, and I can look out at the front package and I have all of these positive associations to it. I can remember when I was like 12 and I used to put them in the freezer and eat frozen ones. And then I can think about when I turn it around and look at the ingredients and how I've researched that. So it's a very weird feeling. It's like I have two experiences of it. So again, the solution here isn't just saying, oh my God, these companies are horrible, I'm never gonna eat their food again. That's what we wanna do, but there's a lot more going on that's gonna influence that. So it doesn't have to be perfection. It just wants to be a progress, improvement. And one of the ways to do that, again, is just becoming aware of the spell that they cast on us and how they specifically cast it on you. They cast it on all of us. How does it feel when you kind of fall into that hypnosis, when you feel yourself getting pulled towards the marketing side of it, as opposed to the actual ingredients and what's in it, what's going to do to you? And so again, watching a video on insulin and blood glucose can be more powerful than me talking about it. Okay. And all of a sudden you have a little movie in your mind when you're thinking about eating a candy bar, you know, you have a movie in your mind of what's going to happen in your body within 10 minutes of you eating that candy bar. So never mind the weight. You know, all of a sudden your mind, you're imagining, you know, the blood sugar, the spike, you know what I mean? Like you're all excited for a little bit, then the insulin gets released, then you start crashing and there's up down feeling. So the more you pay attention to that, again, that's how we change that perception and the association we have, without relying just on willpower. All right. So play around with that and, have a super week. All right, everyone. Cool. You guys good? Looks good. All right, everyone. Have a super week and we'll talk next Tuesday. Good night.